Mark. New Dissident Radio. Listen before it's illegal.
This be Frederick Douglass, and you listening to the Hardened Atheist. We got those radios now.
Hello and welcome to Ardent Atheist, where reason reigns supreme, not frogs and fish. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hello, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the intertubes, and as the lead singer of the Pendulette No God Band, coming again this year to TAM 2012. You can find links to our guest website and our Twitter and Facebook feeds, and our email at ardentatheist.com.
If you'd like to take part in a live chat moderated by Joe Swam, go to the Facebook page for Ardent Atheist, like our page, and join in. We might use your statements in the live broadcast, so join Joe there now.
And please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, and write a review. Help us get in the top 10.
Do it, or we'll take pictures of you in a gay act and post them on Facebook.
Not everyone is a secret homosexual.
Then they're fags.
What?
Nothing.
We only have a couple of rules on our show. Rule number one, guests may plug anything they want.
Anything?
Including Heather.
Anything. Yeah, you know that includes your vagina, anus, and mouth, honey. And rule number two, if you're a listener who's ever been offended by anything, get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. This show has no restrictions on language or content and certainly has nothing for you.
You silly goose.
In the studio tonight, we have Paul Provenza, Dana Gould, and Mark Maron. You know these guys from showbiz. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you. Where's Dana? Is Dana sitting?
He's sitting right there. He'll be talking in a matter of seconds after we introduce you and talk a little bit to you. And
I see how it works.
You shut up, Dana. Keep your mouth shut.
It's the magic of film.
Dana,
I thought this
was
freedom. Why is Dana bound and gagged? Why is Dana crying with duct tape on his mouth?
Atheists are not freedom.
Mostly shame.
We're about oppression.
Well, you are about something.
Yeah, I don't know. Not really.
According to Fox News, we're about nothing. We had a rally about nothing this past weekend.
Is that what Fox said?
Yes.
You were at the rally, Mark, right?
Mm-mm.
No?
No.
Why would I go to the rally?
Why would we invite Mark to come and bum everybody out?
Because you do a cutting-edge podcast that everybody wants to hear.
I do a podcast that deals with existential problems of day-to-day living.
Yes.
I'm not high-minded and set on buzz-killing anybody with an attack on poetry.
There's a lot of judgment in what you said.
An attack on poetry.
You guys, you poetry killers.
Well,
let me tell you something. I got
Dana,
a bone to pick with that mother goose, too.
You just walk in with that face? Can we cheer up? I mean, this is important business.
That's Dana
ironic.
Has kids. Dana has kids. You don't even have a fucking excuse, Mark. You have
Man,
no kids,
Dana,
do you?
When Mark Maron says you need to cheer up, you all know you've crossed the line.
All I have is my head, and that is enough to be miserable. Kids, at least, you look at them and you go, it's not so bad. Look what I have.
Somebody will bury me.
Yeah, exactly. And feed me.
Somebody's going to throw out all this stuff I can't throw out.
That's right.
They're just going to go through. Why did he have Sleepy Hollow trading cards? He was a grown man.
I don't know, but it's in the storage space.
Really? That's the horror they're going to discover for you? Is Sleepy Hollow?
You've changed.
Cards? Yeah. There was a day when I was sure they were going to find much worse.
I have that feeling all the time where I'm
there was a day when they would have.
When I'm surrounded by my stuff and you start to realize that at my age, that what am I hanging on to any of this for? Why can't I just throw it all away?
You become the people who become the sum total of their stuff.
Yeah, but it's you can literally sit there and watch it lose its meaning.
I find it holds me back. It drags me down.
That's really
great. On OkCupid, I don't know if you guys are into that kind of thing, but there's a question on there that you're supposed to answer. If you die, will people be embarrassed or shocked by some of the things they find in your room?
I have. All right.
I got to deal with a professional to give, no matter what happens, get my fucking laptop out of everybody's hands.
Somewhere.
Immediately.
I have a set that I did at Cobb's in 1986. On a cassette tape that I'm not too proud of.
Well, burn that fucking thing.
I have a Pete Townsend All the Best Cowboys Have Chinese Eyes promo poster that I took from Strawberries.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're afraid that
it's
might
never
be
going anywhere.
I don't. There are things that I've saved. I just don't.
The rubber band is now like a twig. It's been in it for
so
long.
So it's
all dried.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a fear of when I look at these boxes of videotapes, I mean, I have videotapes from the mid-'80s of me doing stand-up. And after a certain point, I'm like, I'm not going to digitize these. I'm never going to watch them.
Right.
Why do they represent some indication that I was alive and to who? Like, if God forbid anything happened to me, do I really have a fantasy that there will be a – that a college will fight over this collection? or is my mother or my brother going to be like, I don't even know if we have a machine that plays this.
It'll be like, I think these are glyphs. Yeah. I don't know.
I called my mom and
VHS,
I explained.
VHS is kind of like hieroglyphics now.
And no, it's real. It's, and I was like, yeah, I have to save my Showtime special. I have that big bit making fun of adoption. My Chinese children must grow old and watch that.
I called my mom and I told her that all of the porn that I have is not, I don't masturbate to everything. I needed her to understand that.
Some of it's for research purposes.
I don't know.
Did that come out of the blue or did she find something?
She asked.
This conversation has happened more than once.
It's in his guest room, so he has an extra guest room and there's a whole shelf and it's just porn on one shelf in the guest room.
I have a collection of porn that is not fun to look at.
Well, when you get one, when you get the
Do you call them Wackens?
No, I don't call them Wackens, but I might mark them that now.
When you get the first
three
of
vaguely German.
When you get the first three of a series, you kind of got to get the next 10. Yeah,
You're in. You're completely in. That's exactly how
it is. Doesn't even have the original star.
The ending is like Lost. But it still doesn't really pay off.
I think the Aristocrats is on that shelf too.
Yeah, it is. When it comes to porn, that's the only place where the sequels get better. I mean,
it's weird. I don't stockpile any porn. I don't have any porn. I don't. My attitude about it is I don't embrace it. I use it when necessary. Yeah. So I don't stockpile
like
it.
Like a claw hammer.
You collect your shit, we'll collect ours.
Like a claw hammer.
Well, yeah,
I need it, I need it, and then when I don't have a big collection of claw hammers.
Also involved in masturbation. The only
way Dana, are you masturbating with a claw hammer?
Look, what I do in the privacy
my own garage.
If the only way I can stop myself from falling down the pit of me is grab onto my own cock, I will do that.
hanging on to my cock for dear life.
Yeah, yeah. If anyone walks in on that, I'm like, get out, I'm saving myself. Yeah.
For women, it's harder to hide, though, because usually there involves buzzing things.
Sure.
And so it's really difficult masturbate.
Well, you have to hide them in plain sight. You got to make an end table out of
it. There's an end table that has it all on there, but the noise is distracting to anyone who happens to walk by my door.
Well, that's what always fascinated me about women and men in porn. Like, if any of the women I've been with in my life, there's that moment where they're like, why are you watching that? Aren't I enough? There's that moment where you're like, has nothing to do with you. I'm sad.
This is sad wank.
My wanks are joyful. I don't get this whole sad thing. Porn is degrading.
You mean
awful.
You don't wank for relief?
I wank. I make a night of it. I have epic operatic wanks. Mine go on.
I don't think women understand there isn't enough. There's no such thing with women as enough.
But can I just tell Paul that may not be sad to you, but what you just explained to everybody is pathetic.
Well, I had a boyfriend once who
James Elroyan wanks.
I had a boyfriend once where I told him, I said, yeah, I'm bisexual, and I think it's really cool for you and I to sit around and see the cute women that walk by and go, yeah, look at that girl. Not that I'm gonna just go jump her or I'm trying to leave you. I wanted to enjoy the process with you of looking at other women. I know you like women, I know you jerk off, so let's do this. He did not want to have anything to do with that. He did not like that.
You know why? It didn't have enough to do with him.
I thought it was about
maybe
him, me doing what
watching,
he likes. You know?
Really? Happy watching videos of you perving on chicks.
See, I don't understand people that make their own sex tapes. It's like, what are we going to watch?
Yeah.
I don't know. How about us fucking? Really? There's nothing. What about The Wire?
You know, it's by several orders of magnitude the biggest growing segment of porn is homegrown porn.
Which sort of puts
the lie to everything everybody says.
I don't
porn.
Watch tapes of birthday parties. Why do I want to?
I don't
like how I look there.
Hey, just don't talk about that too much. I love that.
If you could masturbate to kids' birthday parties.
Not kids' birthday parties. Just parties in general.
Oh, no. Kids, I meant the kids'
birthday
parties. Oh.
Which I don't want. Here's something that no one will relate to, which I don't like to watch either because I see them and they're younger and it makes me sad that they're growing older. There you go. Anybody?
Dana Gould, ladies and gentlemen.
Anybody at all?
You have a heart.
You know, this is going to be a first, but have either of you guys tried God? Because there's some happiness there, I've heard.
Have I tried God?
Yeah.
You mean tasted it?
No. It's not something you
is that a thing?
It's not a drink.
It should be. I don't know if I've tried God. Have I prayed in my life?
Do you believe in God, Mark? I don't even know. You know, I've read some.
All right, here we go. Mark's issue is identity. Mark just doesn't like to identify as atheist, but he essentially believes the same thing.
Thank you. That's my spokesperson.
Well, let's find out.
We've already had this argument.
No. I know that you talked to him for your book.
Mark brought a
My argument is, and it's not an argument, the way I present my belief around these issues is that it's not that I don't believe in God or I do believe in God. It's that I honestly don't give a shit, and I don't find a need for it in my life.
Yeah.
And the reason that I take that tact is that there's part of me that thinks, is it really dumber to believe in God than it is to claim absolutely that there isn't one? I'm not sure. And is belief part of the human mental and emotional makeup? Is it something almost genetic, the need to feel part of something larger than yourself? And are you going to deny that to other people, even if you think it's delusional, if it gets them through their sad fucking lives?
If religion wasn't politics.
I'm not talking about religion. I'm not talking about religion.
But hang on
we're talking about God, aren't we?
Hang on a second.
Are we talking about God?
We are talking about God. But okay. God is what enables religion. Religion is now political.
God. Let's stick with God. Why take
you know,
it
Mark, people, because it is about that.
No, let's stick with God.
No, we are sticking with God. What are the outcomes of a belief in God across society?
But that's not what we're talking about. Did you ask me about personal belief?
I didn't ask you anything.
Well, I mean, that was what you asked me.
I did. Provenza is making an argument that, and one of the reasons that I think that you don't like the idea of atheism and atheistic belief systems, as you probably
I'm getting ready,
is what.
Well, Provenza is making an argument that when you say God, you don't get to escape religion. You can't sit across from us right now and say what you just said, and then go. But it doesn't. This has nothing to do with religion. You just can't. And here's why.
Yes, you can.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Let me. An undisciplined mind can. But what you, but what you have is like you know to use a gross analogy. You can't have pets because dogs bite. You can't have a pet. I got bit by a dog.
That's the comparison you're making?
Yeah, because what you're doing is you're looking at a side effect of one aspect of one element of belief. There's tons of aspects of spirituality that don't tie into extreme forms of religion. And I would put it to you that the forms of religion that you are talking about
Christianity and radical Muslim, and
the Sufis that take up all the parking.
Yeah.
How about those Baha'i?
But neither of you guys have any issue with willful ignorance. I understand this premise.
I am completely against organized religion. I'm against the brainwashing of miserable people into
hatred.
Then
what is God? Let's pull Provenza Pitbull off you and let's say what is God? What is it?
What are you asking me now?
Yeah. Tell me.
Well, I'd rather address belief.
Okay, go ahead.
That there is part of the human psyche that in order to define itself needs to feel part of something larger than themselves. And I believe that is a truth.
Okay.
And however you're going to use that, whether it's a sporting event, whether it's cupcakes, whether it's a flying...
a doorknob.
Flying Jew. Well, I mean, practical things.
Fat guy.
No. I mean, there are things that define us externally that we make personal and make spiritual.
I can go for the flying Jew thing. I can get into that one.
You can have that one. That's Jesus.
Yeah. We got that one.
He's a zombie Jew.
Superman was also created.
Yeah, he's
Jews.
Great. Well, comic books, that's another good example.
It's true. In fact, it was a tribute to assimilation that only a Jew could think you could completely disguise yourself. Just put on some glasses.
My big question is to you then is only that there. I know plenty of people that I don't need to know whether they believe in God. They may not even go to a church, but if they do believe in God, all right, fine. Sometimes I've met people who believe in God, and I'm not even sure they're convinced on it, but it somehow comforts them. So in my mind, as an atheist, when you argue somebody, let's say you successfully argue a believer out of their belief in God. Do you high five yourself? Never done it. But what I'm asking you then, what happens when that person is crying and lost? Do you go, well, good luck with everything. I won.
That's not what happens. My mom's life turned around when she found atheism. Turned around profoundly.
Yeah, okay. I could introduce you to thousands of people who have that same story. People who are actually
her fears,
fundamentalist
her depression,
who really bought it all.
But I understand that better. But there's something wrong here,
okay? Because your issue with atheism is not really the issue of the belief. I think that you probably agree with people who are rational and who don't believe in talking
snakes. I have a hard time with controlled freak buzzkill bullies.
Okay, there you go. Okay, let me get to this bully thing for a second here, okay? We had a rally in D.C. this weekend, right? It wasn't to convince anybody that they're wrong, we're right. That's not what it is. What it is that the religious right is a very prominent aspect of our political system.
Homosexuality, school.
I know what it is. I sat in a political talk seat for two fucking years.
And let me finish.
I used to call them the Christo-Fascist Zombie Group.
There
brigade.
You go. Okay, so here's the thing. What the Reason Rally was all about this weekend was to show people, and for me, one of the really profound things about it was that it was really to demonstrate to a lot of politicians and people in government that there is a base that will support them if they don't kowtow to the religious right. Every politician is doing all kinds of stuff that they don't believe in because they don't want to lose the religious right. Let me finish. I'm going someplace. So the Reason Rally was about that. So what we did at the Reason Rally was celebrate the fact that we're free of all of that kind of stuff, and the message was, if you doubt your faith, you know, you're welcome to join us. We will welcome you. We will, there's a community here. There's a lot of people who think like you, because a lot of this country, it's countless cases of people who lost their jobs because they came out at work as atheists. There's all kinds of civil rights issues. You know, there's court cases all over the place where people are trying to get religious symbols to be considered secular and all of that sort of stuff.
I get all that.
Get it. So, but here's my point. What we did was celebrate the fact that we weren't them, and we were not going to have parties in little clusters in the dorm rooms. We were going to have it out on the field.
We were
accused all over the place of being arrogant and bullying and blah, 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 blah. And where that comes from, I believe, the problem where that arises from is that when you're dealing with somebody who has an irrational belief, when you're dealing with somebody who has the willful ignorance of facts and just literally has faith, and a lot of people hold that aspect to it as a badge of honor that, no, we don't need proof, we have faith, right? When you're dealing with somebody like that, if you're going to pick at that issue, then you're sort of you're unraveling the fabric of their identities and the fabric of their existence.
But what about that's a good thing?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh. But that's not the point. The point is that that's where so much of the hostility comes. The hostility is never about the substance of the argument.
Look, everything that rally represents, I'm on board with. And I am an atheist for most practical purposes. But I respect if somebody wants to believe in something because it gives their life definition.
And here's where I go back to that. That would be great. And that's not the people that I was talking to at the rally. That's not the people that
the reason the rally was organized was because that belief,
and everybody who identifies with that belief, and when the forms come around and they take off Christian, okay, that turns into political power.
Okay, let me interrupt you.
But when you equate God with religion, that's where you get in trouble. What about somebody with a rational belief? What about somebody who understands that on a molecular level, human bodies are made of the same molecular material that stars are made of, that trees are made of, that rocks are made of, that birds are made of, and that in that sense, on a molecular level, there's a unified field that ties us in with all of the raw material of the universe, and that there is an energy in that, that if you can elevate yourself in a spiritual sense, you feel at one
much of
with
the poetry,
universe.
Much of atheists, hold on, the poetry Venza. In that
let me,
world.
Let me do my filibuster. when you get to that point, that allows them to tap into a sense of being at one with the universe, and that lifts them up, and that gives them a sense of lightness and lifts the weight of the world from them, and they call that God.
Okay.
That's right.
That's a perfectly acceptable belief in God.
What does God mean is the question.
And the question, when we come back from this break, is going to be, what does God mean? We're going to answer your question. We're going to talk to Dana Gould, and we're going to let Provenza take over, and I'm sure Mark's going to jump in. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Eddie Pepitone, and you're listening to Ardent Atheist, which is a contradiction in terms, because as soon as you're ardent about something, you believe. So these people are full of shit. But listen anyway. because it's fun to listen to people who think they're right.
You're listening to Ardent Atheist on Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes Store this Sunday, April 1st at 2:30 p.m. at the Silent Movie Theater. Our friends and friend of the show, Anthony Spock, and his wife, Jessie Turner, are screening a 40-minute indie film called Sydney Sneaker. This film was shot on a budget of $400 by, believe it or not, Jessie's dad, and it features Jessie. It's a silly and hilarious film. The reason it's playing is because the filmmaker, Jessie's dad, is coming to L.A. to visit. This is a surprise for him. It's a private screening, but we've gotten Jessie to agree to let us invite our
not
L.A.
so private if you're doing
shut up.
All right, I'm just
Jessie has agreed to let us invite our L.A.-based listeners to the screening. It will be really fun, and there's free beer and wine. So,
woo,
Sunday,
beer.
April 1st at 2:30 p.m., the Silent Movie Theater on Fairfax. Come on down. And now back to Ardent Atheist. Nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with Paul Provenza, Dana Gould, and Mark Maron.
Okay,
let's get back to this.
Wait, go ahead.
Wait,
can I just
Mark,
interject
go.
Before Paul takes over? The political motivation of what the rally was about is something that I am completely on board with.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think that if you're dealing with lost people, that it doesn't sound – your tolerance is very specific and it's very limited. That for you to go like, all right, look, anyone's invited who doubts their faith at all, and we encourage you to feel safe in our place. What about the freedom to believe whatever the fuck you want to believe?
You can believe whatever you want to believe.
Right.
But
you're wrong.
To suggest – well, epistemologically, correct. That's right. They are wrong.
Yeah, well, see, I don't buy the arrogance
okay.
of that.
But I'm not saying that, you know, atheists don't say, we know there's no God.
Some of the ones I've talked to do.
We say, well, that's shorthand, because what it is we have, through our powers of reason, we have decided that it's not reasonable to believe in a God.
Okay, well, that's a much more pleasant way to talk like that.
Well, but that's really what
this
atheism
is. What I normally
is.
Say
it's
when
just
people
not.
Ask.
I mean, people say atheism is a religion.
But that's almost non-committal.
Itself, you know,
that's almost non-committal.
It's not non-committal. What it is, you know what I also don't believe in? I also don't believe in a unicorn living in my garage that runs the world. I don't believe in any infinite number of hypotheticals that are completely irrational.
You don't believe in synchronicity and that something.
Well, we're going to talk about that, Mark.
Beyond coincidence,
Mark, you're regurgitating what a lot of people who are anti-atheists say. And quite frankly, we atheists, and we talk, we hang out, we go to fucking rallies. We really don't say that. We just don't. We're really, really, really reasonable people when it comes to how we word what we're saying, because we're up against a big, massive fucking smear campaign on the right.
And we can tell you there's only people. Sort of three modes of response.
Why are there four fingers up?
Let me tell you something.
This one doesn't count.
I don't actively seek God. I've never had a God in my life. Wasn't brought up with God.
Yeah.
Now, your examples of ministers who are so relieved, and your religious mother who couldn't be happier about, you know, being understanding rationally that a belief is delusional, to have a belief in certainly a structured God. I get all that. I was gifted in that no one ever implanted God in my head.
That's how you were raised?
Yeah, I was raised a conservative Jew, which means there was no God.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, but there was other things. There was fish, and there was annoying. but there was
ugly shoes.
Yeah,
lots
yeah.
of food.
And you know, and there was a weird sort of almost a genetic understanding of how people were going to talk to you. And there's also a use of the word of what? There's a lot of that. But yeah. But nonetheless, there's something about cultural traditions that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
So I don't, like, as a person who doesn't crave God, doesn't believe in God, I do seem to have more empathy than you would suggest you do to people that hold on to something that I don't see as dangerous.
Uh-huh.
That you can teach reason to anybody,
so
and
you
can
think,
sit there and break
stuff
down.
Do you think
down.
That at this particular point in history – it's not dangerous as opposed to the rest of recorded history?
No, but what I'm going to ask you is that, like, okay, where do you go? Let's say that that the atheist experiment works, that you are able to convince a good deal of the working people whose lives are shit in this country and hang on to a shred of hope that there might be a heaven, even though it's ridiculous, in order to get through their shit-fuck lives. Let's say you convince them that there is no God. What do you do with their psyches after that? Do you just say, well, good luck, have fun with your rationale?
That's not what happens.
What happens is people
abandon the fear
really?
And the guilt.
Yeah.
People abandon the
trappings of religion.
And the guilt and the horrors
the trappings of religion.
But
okay.
you don't get
and
over
they
it.
Replace
replace it. Hold on. They replace it with reason and critical thinking and scientific process. And that makes people oftentimes, not always. I know people who are psychotic.
They really need to have a fuzzy fucking feeling.
But the guy who doesn't have that issue, all he needs to really be happy, to really find a place in the world where he can be a happy human being.
Like you.
Is fucking reason. That's what I'm saying.
You know, when I found out the light bulb the lightning bolt happened at the same time. The light bulb went on and I got a big shock. Like, oh my fucking God, I've been lied to my entire life. I thought I was dumb. You know, I was believing all this stuff. And I realized that I actually could think reasonably and I could think...
I think a lot of the antipathy. You know,
but I think reasonably.
But I wasn't told that. You know?
I think a lot of the antipathy.
I was told just believe what my mom said and believe what the church said.
I'm so glad my parents were so self-involved that they barely
read it. This is where she just said it. And this is where I believe that you guys where a lot of the attacks on atheists come from. What you just said it. You were told by your mom and the church. And attacking those things are great. Belief. And
by the way,
ridiculous
structures. That's what we're doing.
But when you say God, you're dictating something to people that they're not willing to throw out to you.
Well, we understand that, but that doesn't make us wrong.
Yes, it does.
No one says
yes, it does. Because your attack on the church is based in something that is concrete and provable. That the church is by and large a mechanism for power that creates fantasy and enforces
yes,
it.
Yes, but and then exploits fear.
And your attack on God is. Yes. And let me tell you something else about something utterly unprovable. That's why when you get into something that is internal, unprovable, and innately up to the individual to decide, you know, a God can be something that you know, a God can be a. Within yourself, you know, in meditation, you get to a point in yourself where you find peace within yourself when you're deep in meditation, and you could call that state.
You won't find an atheist that has a problem with it. I meditate.
No, all I'm saying is you guys keep using the word God, and you keep getting into trouble for it.
No, we
don't. Stop stepping in that piece of verbal shit.
First of all, there's no difference between what you're accusing us of doing and what you're doing now about atheists. There's no difference.
You can't champion reason without addressing a belief in God, because it's the single most profound lapse of reason.
No, that's utterly wrong. How can you say that
because
you can't conceive of it. Because you can't conceive of it, it cannot possibly exist.
What don't you believe in? Do you not believe in the unicorn that lives in my garage that runs the world? How about Thor?
I tell you what I believe in.
We don't have to prove non-existence.
Let me prove it to you.
But what about the power of mythology?
Wait a minute. No.
I'm all with that. That's literature.
Is my dog...
Fine. That's art.
Paul, is my dog real?
Yes, your dog is real.
Is my computer real?
Yes, your dog.
How is that possible? When my dog cannot conceive of my computer, how can they be in the same room?
Because your dog is not able to reason.
So the argument you're making right now is that human beings they don't have the capacity to perceive God. That's the argument you're making, Dana.
No, I know what I'm saying is, let me untwist the way you twisted it. What I'm saying is that human beings can only conceive of what they can conceive. And that it is entirely possible in an infinite universe for something beyond my conception to exist.
That's right. And the minute you can show that thing beyond our current perception exists.
That's why it's called faith.
It's why it's called faith.
So but look at all the things that you don't have faith in that people have had faith in. Okay, what's different about this? The difference is when you apply reason to it, it all ends up on the same side of the line.
Because I'm applying an open-minded acceptance to the possibility of something.
My mind is open. Evidence.
Do you have an open-minded possibility of a unicorn in my garage that runs the world?
You're saying a unicorn. I'm saying something that I can't conceive of.
But the only
something
difference...
he's
not putting a label on it.
He's not even offering anything of any substance.
No, he's offering curiosity.
Which is fine.
Okay.
We have curiosity. We're currently spending billions of dollars to try and figure out how the fucking beginning of the universe happened.
Well, good luck
and
with
that's,
that.
When that's it's, curiosity wait, wait.
Well, I hope
that's
that,
worth doing.
I hope it happens in your lifetimes and you can get some closure and you can go, ha, fuck all of you. We knew it.
No, that doesn't prove God doesn't exist, by the way, for the record. If we figure out what caused the universe to come into existence,
existence or how it came into existence mechanically, it doesn't disprove the possibility that there was something that created God.
I had a religious person say to me, but you're saying
so that even after your end game, there might be some more exploring to do because we got to get a handle on it.
I had a religious person say to me, you're an atheist. If you can prove how we all got here and how everything happened and began, I'll convert right now. And I said to her, that's not how we do things. We just simply say we don't know until there's evidence that shows
that's the thing.
An answer.
Yeah, but see, but the people who don't think that way are just saying, well, until then,
right.
I'm going
to
hang on
to
these
dreams. I try to be
an
example for people like that.
This is sort of seven characters in search of an exit that we're all in a room with no dupe. Excuse me. We're all in a round room with no doors, arguing what kind of room it is. We don't realize that we're in a giant's top hat.
I'm just trying to get to my feelings about this. I see how worked up you get.
Well, you too, by the way.
Well, I get worked up only in the sense that I don't generally think about this shit. I have spent.
That's another point I want to bring up.
The truth is, like, I've spent a lot of my career attacking Christianity, attacking Judaism, you know, calling out, belief, hanging your hopes on myths. And I've done that. Yeah. And it's funny.
Yeah.
And it does posit something in people's minds.
Yep, yep.
When I bring up Jesus and I say, I'm sorry, I don't mean to mock the myths that define some of you.
Right.
I get a laugh from Christians.
Right.
But in my day-to-day life, whatever reason I'm applying to things is that my curiosity, it does not extend to this area that much because I don't. You know,
right.
And I approach my life with a certain amount of logic and an appreciation of poetry.
It's like you don't even bother spending time on this question because it's that irrelevant.
No, it's not so much that it's personally irrelevant to me, but I know that it's very, and I understand where you're coming from because I've recently got an email that said, you know, you're on the wrong side of history on this. You need to stand up for atheism, specifically for the reasons that you talked about the point of the rally.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that as a political person, as a person that is open-minded and left-leaning, and as a person who has attacked the right and the Christian mm-hmm. right yeah. relentlessly for years.
Yeah.
But you know what? I got tired of that.
Right.
For one, and I put down my sword. Maybe I did my time. I'm not sure. But what I talk about on a day-to-day basis is personal struggle in the face of a world that is, you know, shattering people's ability to be intimate, to communicate, filled with distractions that not only obstruct a path to any personal spirituality, but also we have no idea the repercussions of what's happening just, you know, by the amount of information we take on every day.
Right.
Those are my immediate issues.
Right.
You know, whether there's a God or there's no God, you know, fight it out amongst your own spirit. I do have a problem with religion. I do have a problem with the exploitation of religion. I do have a problem that of ignorant religion and people that you can't argue with because they're so hung up on their beliefs. I have a problem with all of that. But I'm not arguing with you. There's just part of me that thinks if somebody needs to believe in a unicorn on a day-to-day basis and they don't tell me about it, and I say, do you believe in God? And they're like, no, I believe in something. Is it a unicorn? I don't really want to talk about that. All right, well, you're not bothering me, and you're acting like a decent person. Live your life.
Yeah, that's the way I like to live my life as well.
I got no problem with that.
But it doesn't
I honestly
that
don't.
Way. But hang on, I just want to bring up something that you mentioned. That your
Most
approach
Buddhists
to all
I have
this,
no problem with.
Right. Your approach to all this, though, is an interesting thing. And again, this goes back to kind of what we're hoping the Reason Rally serves a purpose.
You want me to have a voice in this thing.
No. What I'm saying is that most people really don't buy into all the woo-woo. Most people really don't.
And the what woo-woo?
Like they're, you know, there are Catholics, there are Roman Catholics who go and take confession every Sunday and they do their thing, everything. But if you ask them, do you really believe that this has transformed into the body
and
blood
of
Christ?
No, it's tradition and community,
it's
habit.
And it's
okay,
not
but
hurting
hang on
your
a
mom's feelings.
But what my point
that's
is
true,
this.
It's right? true.
My point
that's
is true. This, that many, many people who identify as one religion or another usually really haven't given it any thought about it. They don't really – it doesn't matter to
most
them.
Most believers have never even read the book.
But the point is that most of them actually don't really believe everything
that.
The book tells them.
I know that. Yeah, I mean,
okay?
I identify as a Jew, and I don't do the homework, but I like the stories. And the bottom line is like I'm one of the rare people that the idea of heaven sounds relentless and horrible to
me. It sounds despicable.
Who wants to go there?
Well, yeah, but hell, equally.
But people say you're going to die alone, you know, by yourself and everything.
Like, yeah.
I keep thinking to myself how fucking great that would be.
Yeah.
Just finally some peace and quiet.
Emery's mom, you know, asked the question, if I'm in heaven and my loved one doesn't get in there, how is that heaven for me? if they're not, if they're burning in hell.
It ain't heaven if my son is in hell burning.
Right, yeah.
And she called a preacher and he goes, God will wipe away all tears.
I think what I'm saying, and maybe he will, who the hell knows? That what I'm saying is.
It could be an uncle.
If someone's wiping
my
away
uncle
tears,
was causing tears and wiping them away.
Well, that's a minister. Was he a minister?
He was not a minister.
What I'm saying is that, you know, I appreciate the fight, but it doesn't feel like my personal fight. And I'm certainly on board with what you're saying, but I'm also on board with I don't mind what Dana's saying either. But I don't sit and think about, like, okay, let's say we figured it all out. There's still a blackness out there that's undefinable. I'm like, well, we need to find the answer. It's like, I'm just trying to figure out whether or not to get ice cream. So I don't preoccupy.
I want to help you out. Get the ice cream.
No, I feel horrible.
No, get the fucking ice cream.
That's fine with the ice cream maker. You know, it's the Art and Atheist show, so that's what we're talking about.
No, don't shift gears because you were. See what you did?
He thought it was the irascible ice cream show.
No, but I made it.
I think Mark thinks he's got Provenz on the ropes, and I want to know.
No, I don't think he has him on the ropes. What I think is that, like, what I'm saying is, I agree with you, and I know you're ardent because you're yelling at me a couple minutes ago. And Emery was yelling, and it's so amazing how quickly atheists yell. I find that even when you're like, look,
you're just
okay.
You're just not used to people not backing down from you.
No, I don't see confrontation anymore.
That was a life thing.
No, I don't. But like, I've had these conversations before, and I want to talk about reason. I want to talk about, you know, being rational. But like within seconds, on a very little provocation, I'm like, no. And then I'm like, why is this person yelling? I thought he found peace through reason. How does reason help your fear?
First of all, it's not really yelling. It's certainly a heated discussion without question, and that's what I'd like to have on the show, absolutely.
No, sorry, did I just make things, it too...
Yeah, you pulled the curtain back. The bottom line, though, is the reason that you're seeing that is when Dana says something like, for example, something like, and I'm just going to describe it probably inaccurately, the idea that we're all connected somehow, right? And what's wrong with calling that God, right? Well, one of the things that
we're connected by a love of porn.
Yeah, we are indeed.
With that, I'm not willing to commit.
That's where I find spirituality.
Yeah. But that's good.
Fine with me.
It is. Why is that fine?
They all seem like very nice people.
Do they?
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Let me tell you something. When a guy can find happiness with another guy's foot in his ass, that's living life.
Really? That's better than God?
I don't know if it's better than God, but it's fucking
Mark, you know, your perception on porn, really, I mean, we have to look at what your particular sexual issues are.
I call it the naked.
You know, I can't take your particular position on porn. I know, we've talked about this before, about how porn is destructive and stuff.
I watch porn.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not going to lie to myself and say, like, I'm going to watch a lot of this every day because this is worth celebrating.
The internet makes it so much easier. I don't know why anybody's going into those booths anymore.
Really? We'll be right
back
to you.
We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Ardent Atheist on Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes store.
Camp
Quest. I call it the Naked Victim Show. Oh, it's a live one.
Camp Quest provides children of free-thinking parents a residential summer camp dedicated to improving the human condition through rational inquiry, critical and creative thinking, the scientific method, self-respect, ethics, competency, democracy, free speech, and the separation of religious and government guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States. Children 8 to 17 are welcome, and Emery and I fully endorse Camp Quest, and if you would like to know more, please go to www.campquest.org
to learn more. And now, back to Ardent Atheist, nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with Paul Provenza, Dana Gould, and Mark Maron. Or are we yelling?
No, I completely...
Sorry, I didn't know that was a live spot.
That's all right.
Don't worry about it. That's all we do.
I understand the porn thing. I get it. I just don't. And I know that our country and our world has been successfully pornographied. And I'm certainly glad that everyone's fucking and jerking off home alone to pornography. But after a certain point, maybe after, you know, hour three in one sitting, you might want to ask yourself some personal questions. See, the only thing that all I can speak to them, and this is how I handle these conversations, is that I refuse to speak from anything other than personal experience around what I have experienced with my relationship with or without a God, my relationship with or without porn. I try not to speak in general terms as if I understand everything. I know for myself, like for instance with God, that I've had periods in my life where I was told to pray because I was told that it would help me stay sober. I was given a choice of God. I was told that I can pray to nothing. And I was told that, you know, look, you know, you're in a desperate situation. There, you know, you can choose your higher power. You don't have to have one at all. But once you get down on your knees to try that, once you try prayer. So my experience when I tried prayer, being someone who wasn't brought up with God and somebody who doesn't believe in God, was that, wow, this is humiliating. Yet I'm the same guy that would get on my knees in a men's room if I dropped a fucking rock of Coke on the floor and use my wet finger to pick it up and stick it in my mouth.
That was your higher power.
That was another form of worship. That was humiliating too. But the one experience I did have as somebody who doesn't believe in God on my knees praying to nothing was that this is humbling, this is quiet, this makes me smaller than I thought I was, and I feel closer to being a human being. And that was without God. So the actual act of prayer and humbling myself before something that I didn't understand or did I think existed did make me feel like a more a humbler person.
Well, yes, but don't confuse it with prayer. See, that's the thing, is I think that prayer co-opts for I think prayer has become a substitute for introspection for a lot of people.
Well, that's, so that's okay.
I just still don't. I don't think it's okay.
You don't like to call it prayer, you mean?
No, what I'm saying is that a lot of people who pray in lieu of actual introspection.
Western prayer is just a graduated example of a letter to Santa. It's just every night you mutter your list of wants to an invisible giant.
But what about that? But what about a prayer that says, you know, I'm lost?
No,
I'm
in pain. And that's real sincere praying. Sincere. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like when people like, say your prayers.
Classic. Yeah.
No, I've been in your situation. I've been in your situation. I understand your situation, and that's it's very freeing. And it sort of goes to, I'm going to do a real hacky thing. The movie Castaway.
Mm-hmm.
Wilson,
right, yeah, sure.
People who are alone sometimes have to create something
right.
to take their load for a little bit.
Right.
Oh. And if that's in – if it's
are we talking about porn again?
Psychological load, yeah, sorry. The other one is a stuffed teddy bear that I have lined with sandwich bags. Be it that if it's something that you create within you and you cast it as a third person, if you can recognize that it was within you, I think that's all fine. There's the distinction between philosophy and religion,
like the Eastern philosophies versus some people call them religious, but they're actually more philosophies because of this very thing.
There is a theory that in several conversations, have you thought about killing yourself? Yes. Good. That will keep you from killing yourself.
Nice.
No, I find it very relaxing.
No, sure.
That's my comfort zone.
That is the spiritual.
I'm always gaming out scenarios.
So that's interesting because that is actually the spiritual reprieve of the faithless.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, that like I can always kill myself. Oh, okay. Back to work.
No, it makes a lot of stuff.
But the thing about
that's how I got through Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes remake.
Listen, I want to talk a little bit about prayer again.
No one's ever going to say that this flew by.
No, they
aren't. Okay, go ahead. That's a sign of a good radio show.
Prayer is the act of getting down and not just
introspection. Fuck talk with Terry Gross.
Prayer is the act of getting down on your knees and not just introspecting. That's the problem. Being introspective is not all it's about. There's a lot of really filthy, nasty, vile bullshit that goes along with
convincing
someone to get down on their knees and worship this thing that doesn't really exist probably.
Certainly Catholic prayer is all about minimizing. Okay, Catholic prayer is all about saying, I'm nothing.
Tell that to a stranger,
too. That's right.
Okay. And that's my
problem.
If you don't
think that has an effect.
In fact, there was a part of the Catholic Mass, which I, as a child, rejected. When I was a lector, when I was on the payroll, when I was an altar boy and a lector, was, Lord, I am not worthy to receive you.
Right.
Only say the word and I will be healed. That's by rote. But,
that's ubiquitous.
But this is, now we're in the weeds of religion. This is all carnival.
But this is within the context of religion and all that stuff is true. But I'm telling you, as somebody that never got on his knees for anything, and I don't get on my knees now, but there was a point where I did that, and the experience I had was, this is humbling. And the idea that it could be, I understand how you're saying it's an obstacle to introspection, but sometimes that moment of humiliation or humility or humbling can clear the way for introspection.
I think it can, especially with someone who's wrestling with
mental.
Hold on.
I also don't believe it needs to be supernatural to accomplish that.
No, it wasn't supernatural.
For you, that's right.
But someone who's wrestling with their own psychosis, someone who's trying to find a way just to be happy or to get out of some horrible, horrible emotional
pit. To get out of themselves.
Like the 12-step people.
That's
That's, I'm a 12-step person.
That's the I figured.
What's what's your higher power? And it's really difficult for people in 12-step.
It's not difficult for me at all.
Well, some people are atheists.
What do I do? I just disregard it and take the suggestions.
There's a great book by Bucky Sinister.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to have a higher power. It's not part of it. You know, it basically, you know, I mean, 12 steps is just gutted Christianity.
Yeah.
It's how to behave properly when you have a compulsion.
Yeah.
It made me, like, I got a little obsessed with the seven deadly sins because I didn't understand it until I read Christopher Hedges, who's a brilliant guy and a thoughtful guy. And he wrote some great books. He's a war journalist. He wrote War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. He wrote American Fascists about the Christian right. But he's a very thoughtful guy. He's a guy who went to Harvard Divinity and then said, fuck that, I'm going to be a war correspondent. And his writings about morality are very interesting. And what he presented was, if you look at the seven deadly sins, they are a reasonable list of natural human impulses. That when they become a problem is when any one of them or many of them go fucking haywire.
Right.
So the whole idea of sin was not designed for people to perfect themselves, but it was designed for them to judge themselves against what could go wrong. Okay. That sin is not like, I need to get rid of sin because I'm going to be a perfect person. These are sins because if pride gets too far out of the fucking hand, I'm going to be a dick and I'm going to fuck my life up. If gluttony gets too far a hand, I'm going to be 350 pounds and I'm not going to be able to leave my house. These are all natural human impulses, but somehow you have to temper them. Now, if you can temper them through reason and discipline.
That's the argument of the atheist and that's the argument of the non-believer. The argument of the non-believer is learn morality without the threat of fire.
That's what getting back to the 12 steps is that really they're just, you know, a series of suggestions that make compulsive people act properly.
Right.
So, you know, it's not really about God and the issue of God is really up to you. It's the most non-pressured fucking, you know, bit of business I've ever dealt with.
I agree.
I think that it'd be really easier if you just got rid of the whole God thing and put, you know, in the 12-step program at all. I mean, obviously
they have
12-step
meetings for atheists.
Yeah, they do have some secular ones I've seen.
They're all secular.
There's a great
it's not
100% true.
Well, you know, they do
it's
say
not 100% true.
They do say
there is a little infiltration there.
There's infiltration, but it's not required.
Right, it's not required.
Right.
But still, as an atheist sitting in a meeting, it's got to be like just mind-boggling to see these people.
I guess you have to go to the right meeting. You have to go to the one that
there's tons of meetings. But I mean, it's like even that. Like I don't go as much as I used to. But the only things that I learned there, you know, in terms of you know, addressing addiction and addressing obsession, is that what you were saying about like Christian or Catholic saying, you know, I'm worthless, I'm nothing.
Right.
That part of the idea that the brain thinks it can control a lot of things that it doesn't have control over, and either you're going to project that control or you're going to, you know, try to control things that you really don't have control over. And what I grew to realize is that there's very little that I have control over and I'm just going to have to let that be. That's reason.
We have a fan right, on the page, Jesse.
So you only care about the things you have no control over that are destructive and mean something.
There's things
you have no control over that aren't that dangerous door. You don't have to concern yourself with.
Well, no, there's just very few things. Like, you know, when I walk out that door, I have really no fucking idea what fate or what's going to fall out of the sky, and you know I got to be okay with that.
Right. We have a question.
You're going to get some funeral tales.
We have a question. Jesse Settegren
is a listener who emailed me, and she is a recovering. She's out, so this is all okay. She emailed me, and she's a recovering heroin addict, and she was having trouble with the 12-step program higher power problem. I put her in touch with a friend, Tat, who said she'd talk to her and some other people, and kind of got her over that hump and
she just
really
disregarded it. I tell people all the time. Well, I'm like, don't even think about it.
She asked you specifically.
Yeah. Hold on. Is she on the wall?
Yes. I want to hear how he works steps 12, 3, 6, 7, and 11 if he disregards a higher power. Do you work the steps?
Sometimes. I don't have my book in front of me. 3, came to believe that power greater than self couldn't restore us to sanity.
Yeah.
I do it just the way that I just said, that there's a lot of things out of my control. Yeah, most things are out of my control. That I can surrender that, and I don't find myself aggravated about it. Like that's the moment where you take the leap of faith, is if you can admit that there's a power greater than myself that's going to restore me to sanity, or you can admit that there's a shitload of stuff out of my control and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So why not be okay with that? I mean, that's all relative to fear. In terms of prayer and meditation or anything else that, that has to do with God stuff, I don't engage in it that much. And quite honestly, you know, since I've been sober, it's been over 12 years, and I don't work a legitimate program, but I do get around other alcoholics. I do talk to other alcoholics, because what you're dealing with here in how they present it in the program is it's a disease of the mind, spirit, and body. So if you want to go with the spirit thing, that's fine. But in my understanding of the program, the only reason it works is that you have one alcoholic talking to another one.
That's exactly why it works, I think.
Yeah, and that's it. So what I glean from it, I think that steps 4 and 5 are fucking genius.
Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves as 4, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being about the exact
nature of our wrongs. Those things are fucking insanely
And you
brilliant.
Just disregard the God, go to the human beings, and
it works
for you.
That's right, because you know what you do, what is structured there is you say, you know, this is who I'm pissed off at, or the institution, or the person, or the event. This is why. This is my side of it, and this is the part of me that was acting out in that.
Right.
So you literally have columns. And the amazing thing about it is if you do it thoroughly, you can see exactly what kind of asshole you are.
It's essentially the process of cognitive psychology.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, this is all, you know, it's all, you know, mixed together.
Right.
But I don't have any problem with the program and not believing in God at all. It's not like, because a lot of people, especially alcoholics and addicts who are, you know, really, you know, demons in exile. I mean, they are the last fucking people in the world that want to have anything to do with God. And the problem, the tricky thing with alcoholics and addicts is as soon as they get into a room, all they want to do is drugs. They're not there because they want to be there. They're either there because they have to be there, or they died once, or they ended up in prison, or whatever. It's an amazing stretch of willingness when you're in the grips of addiction to not do it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they get in there and they're like, oh, is God here? Fuck this. I'm going to do heroin. But the truth of the matter is, it's not put upon you. I know a lot more atheists in the program, and then some people eventually find some spirituality, and they don't necessarily talk about it. Whatever. But for me, over 12 years sober, I've not had an act of higher power in any of those years.
And here's an example, by the way, to answer both you and Dana. For me personally, I'm an outspoken fucking atheist. I'm an activist in that sense. I don't give a shit about – the only problem I have with the 12-step program is no government official should be demanding that someone go to it, because it does involve the God thing, and that the Constitution says they don't have the right to do that. Find one that doesn't have God and demand they go to that one, and you're fine with me. That's my complaint. I think a lot of people have gotten a lot of good from this process.
Oh, it's undeniable.
Yeah, I have no problems with it. I really don't.
There's a name I wanted to get out, and if you don't know them, I should hook you up with them. A friend of mine in San Francisco named Bucky Sinister.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's a
he's
poet
written
and
a book about.
And,
go ahead.
And a recovery book for atheists.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
And the principles of the ideas and the principles of the program, you know, function fine without God.
And there's sort of the joke theory about it. You can. It probably has a lot of validity to it. Is, you know, if man didn't need God, he wouldn't have made him up.
That's absolutely true. I agree with that. I think we don't need him anymore. That's my opinion. I want to get Jesse's asked a very specific question.
That's
I want to make sure you
talk
to
her. Go ahead.
Sought through the 11 is sought through prayer and meditation. The prayer is what she's questioning.
Right.
I think, and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God.
Praying
only for knowledge of God's will for us to have and the power to carry that.
Sure,
out. That's
sure.
11.
Right. And, well, let's address that.
Go ahead.
That you know, alcoholics and addicts are fundamentally, you know, selfish, pathologically self-centered people, and they seek to serve themselves only. And what the way the program works is that it sort of forces, you know, people who are in those rooms to set up chairs, make coffee, and say hello to other people and try to listen to someone else's experience, mm-hmm. yeah. which is a tall order for a self-centered fuck.
Right.
Now, the way I see that step is that, you know, it can just be meditation. It doesn't even have to be meditation. It's just a matter of trying to think of yourself second as a way to learn how to do right by your fellow human beings. Which is a fine thing.
I'm step 12. Like, let me get to step 12 real quick.
Go ahead. Because
we got to do a break, too. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
That's right.
She's asking about the spiritual awakening. And
the spiritual awakening is you're fucking sober, aren't you? So go out and say, here's how I got sober. Let me take you to this thing.
There you go. We're going to meet Jesse at TAM.
But there are a lot
year.
Of people Yay. Who don't perceive it the way you perceive it. And
well,
that's
fine.
No. What I'm saying is, this gets back to that other thing about, you know, identifying and what atheist is and believing in God is what's wrong with believing in something that gives you comfort. I'm going back to that sort of thing, is that the way you guys perceive a belief in God is...
You guys being black people?
No, that I would have said those people. Now, you guys have... that's not the way everybody perceives it. For some people, it's a very, very literal lapse in reason.
Most don't. You know, most don't think the way you're talking
most
about
Most don't think the way you're
talking. I used to come home from school and find my mother kneeling on the living room floor with her hands on the TV screen praying with Oral Roberts.
Yikes.
So my visions of wow. faith at all are so acidic that it was only after I had to trash all of that and just come back to the theory that, as I said, and it's basically based in math.
My mom did that too. I'd come into her room and she'd be watching, you know, some really famous religious preacher with a crowd of thousands and holding her hands up and staring at the TV. And it's
my mother
really
taught me how to shoplift.
Disconcerting.
Really?
Yeah, she taught me how to shoplift, and the money that we saved she from the groceries she would send to Oral Roberts.
Jeez.
There's no moral dilemma there. But Mark, let me ask you something about this AA thing.
It's about this AA. Yeah.
Wait, I got to do a break. I got to do a break, and then he's going to ask about the AA thing. You're listening to Ardent Atheist on Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes Store. And now, a special announcement.
This is a big super shout-out to a few of our listeners. Kathy Burtness, Dean Jones, Cameron Winters, Joseph Swam, Chris Elzinga, Adrian Haig, Christian G. McFadden, Don DiNatal, Kyle Delaney, Karen Abizer, Jesse Settegrin, Alistair Nicholson, Pete Morini, and Eric Knight. These were all the people chatting on the Wall of Reason last week. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We would not have a great show without
And
you.
Now back to Ardent Atheist, nonsense you can believe in. We're talking about Paul Provenza, Dana Gould, and Mark Maron. Provenza.
I'm breaking a rule of AA right now just talking about it. Go ahead.
It's like Fight Club.
I want bad coffee and sugar cookies.
From my experience of it, it seemed to me that really what the experience of AA is for most people, I think, is genuine intimacy.
Well, it's being empathetic and able to be selfless by forcing yourself to do so.
Well, people who are addicts will isolate themselves.
They'll isolate and themselves, and also they'll hustle everybody. It's all about self. And it took me up until 2 years ago, and it was not because of AA. It was because of my podcast that I learned how to be comfortable with myself and actually listen actively to somebody else in an empathetic way.
Tough.
And I'm moved. And I learned that in AA because when you listen to the fucking heartbreak of people who cannot get out from under their addiction and what that thing dragged them through.
That's what I mean about intimacy.
And then you start to
get into that world where people are sharing the things that they're
It's human.
And you're not alone.
Intimacy, from a human standpoint, I'm saying
And you can say that emotionally and psychologically, that is the psychological equivalent of getting on your knees.
That's
that
right.
Of getting over yourself.
Right.
And putting yourself away and opening yourself up to someone else.
It's profound shit. And as a selfish,
I like the idea that you open yourself up to a group of other human beings. That's really good and healthy.
But just to open yourself up to one person, to me, was such a threat.
Yeah.
That you know what I mean? It's like as soon as I do. As soon as I opened up a little bit, and they would, and I'd see the look on their face, it'd be like, oh, we're there. I'd go, what do you mean we're there?
I know.
Well, has it altered your intimacy in life, your issues around intimacy in life?
Over a period of time, what eventually happened, and, you know, where you think alcoholism comes from or what created that hole or that gap in you, you know, what you were trying to fill. And I don't think it's a spiritual hole. I think it could be, you know, a badly parented hole. There's a lot of holes.
Right.
Oh,
so,
holes.
Yeah,
I love the holes.
And, yeah, you can spend your life trying to fuck those holes, but, you know, ultimately you might want to fill them.
I'm sorry, too much for me.
but the thing that ultimately happened to me is that, you know, I became comfortable myself through a series of events. And the chronic discomfort of feeling like you don't fit in any way is horrendous because you don't feel like a whole person. So at some point, you know, it has to be a testimony to a failed marriage, to a tremendous amount of anger, to addiction and to being an obsessive person, that self-acceptance was a tremendous chore for me.
Right.
But because I stayed sober and because I got my ass handed to me by a woman, you know, I eventually shaped up and fell into myself, that I'm okay with me.
I know that sounds stupid, but it's a big deal.
So no, let me be clear. I want to be very clear. So crack is bad?
Sometimes. Okay. You know, only right. if you're a casual crack user.
Only if you're a pussy like Mark.
I also want to let you know that Jesse here.
Not for a real man.
Jesse says that your podcast literally changed her life. It's no joke. She got through withdrawals and guilt and shame by listening to What the Fuck constantly.
Oh, that's... That,
come on. Now, how's that for a great
Which way? Do you think it was? Yeah. Do you think it was the Carlos Mencia episode?
Or, no, I think it was just... Or the Dane Cook episode. I think it was being honest.
Intimacy.
Mark, I know you didn't really want to come on the show, and I really thank you for coming out here.
Oh, I appreciate you having me.
Yes,
I'm a big fan of you and your show.
Thanks.
Dana, thank you also
thank
for
you
being
very
here.
Much.
And Provenza, fuck off.
Always a treat.
You need, you need to come to the Valley more, man.
I don't even know where I am.
You need to be in the 818.
I'm just going to record my porn sessions, and that'll be my podcast.
I also want to thank my co-host Heather Henderson and Dissident Radio. Tune in next week, where our guests will be Rachel Lichtman and Gary Stockdale. We'll be talking about...
Just tune in. It's always great.
There you go. That's it for episode 59. I'm your host, Emery Emery. Once again, thank you very much to Paul Provenza, Dana Gould, and Mark Maron.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson. And special thanks to the ginormous penis of our Facebook publicist, Cameron Winters. And our Wall of Reason moderator, whom I have no penis-related information on, Joseph Flip Flam, Sink or Swam.
And remember, crack is bad and there's no God.
Crack is whack.
You've been listening to Ardent Atheist on Dissident Radio. Ardent Atheist is a product of natural selection.
Yeah.
Thanks again, guys.
Yeah. Everybody on the Wall of Reason is
fun,
really
it?
Happy going, whoop, whoop, whoop.
Is anybody on the funeral?
New Dissident Radio. Listen before it's illegal.